All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome you back to another
high-ranking episode of V8 Radio.
High-ranking. Fantastic.
That's right. And I say that because we made the list of popular automotive podcasts on iTunes.
Well, you did, my esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Hubal-Clark. I'm Kevin Oestey, and diving right in there, pal, to one of the topics of the day. On our meteoric rise to mediocrity.
Oh, right on.
We have huge news in the sense that, yeah, congratulations there, my friend.
Likewise.
And what he's referring to is this very program, V8 Radio, has now been, we've been carried and distributed on iTunes for quite a while, but when you go through the iTunes menu and you click on the automotive genre of podcasts, we are now on the page of the popular automotive podcasts.
Right on.
It's incredible.
I feel like Steve Martin in The Jerk. The phone books finally came. I'm somebody.
That's right. So now we're gunning for Adam Carolla.
That's right.
We just got to jump over about 385 more different shows.
In popularity. Coming for you, Car Talk.
That's right. Step aside there, click and clack.
That's right. There's a new sheriff in town.
That's right. Clunk.
Oh, right on.
Man. All right. Well, that's pretty cool, though. That is.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, our listener must be repeating the shows.
Right. He has it on loop.
And I've learned that we have a couple more listeners. My wife, Kelly, actually listens to this show.
That is amazing.
It is. You'd think she'd, you know, hear enough out of me. She probably only listens for you.
Well, you know, hey, what can I tell you, baby? I got the golden pipes.
As most people do, I bet. Yeah. I keep catching her, you know. She'll be working on something, and she'll be I'll hear you on the phone, you know.
Is that right?
Streaming through the phone. Like, what's going on over there?
Hey, who are you talking to over there?
Are you listening to those lunkheads? And she digs the show. So shout out to Kelly. How about that?
Thank you, Kelly.
Yeah. Right on. So typically on the show, we try to talk about automotive kind of related stuff, and today we jumped right into it, but normally we start off with a trivia contest, a little question about some automotive trivia. Do you have anything prepared this episode?
Absolutely I do, sir. I do have a high-ranking question.
Yes, he says vindictively.
Right. Mm-hmm. No, this is going to be a nice softball like last month, or last episode, rather.
All right. Well, what do you got? I'm ready.
All right, my man. In 1962, our friends at GM launched two cars that were turbocharged. What were they?
1962, GM launched not one, but two turbocharged cars.
Mm-hmm.
One was the Oldsmobile Starfire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The other is my guess on the one. The other, I'm going to say, was a Buick.
Hmm.
Uh-huh. He's looking at me like trying to be stoic. I'm pretty sure it was a Buick, and it wasn't the old Starfire. I correct myself. It was the old Jetfire. At least that's what I think that's what they called the turbo. A friend of mine has two of those.
Is that right?
Yeah. In fact, he works, it's Gary Turnow, who works at Mother's Wax.
Really?
Yes, and he has a couple of those Oldsmobile Jetfire cars. And it's pretty cool because they've got an alcohol bottle that goes with them.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, and you fill the alcohol bottle. You'd go to your Oldsmobile dealership, and it wasn't like, you know, filling it with whiskey or anything.
It was
methanol, basically, and... that would allow you to actually use the turbo and put your foot down and kill detonation.
I gotcha. That's pretty cool. Factory methanol injection.
That's right. So if you drove this thing around and you know, floored it eight times, the little quart bottle of methanol would be gone. And then you'd have to just baby this car around in fear of detonating it and grenading the motor.
Oh, brother.
So I'm pretty sure Buick did the other turbo car. unless was it a Corvair? Oh,
was
I
it?
I think it might have been a Corvair. So that's my final answer.
So old Jetfire and Corvair.
Yeah, but
and that's our final answer.
That is. I'm sketchy on the Corvair, but anyway, that's my guess.
Okay. Well, I am notating that.
All right, all right. Well, right I got one that's I don't know what it is, but I'll ask.
It's all a right. question you're going to get wrong, Mike. That's what it is.
Well, I don't know. In 1956, our friends at General Motors, again, were really, they've been busy, apparently.
Yeah.
And they came out with a headlight that has a designation on the lens where it says T3 on the lens. And they used them for quite a while, from 56 up to, I think, 73. And many of these T3 lights are sought after, not only because they were correct on cars of the day, but a lot of them still work. And in fact, my 70 Buick Riviera has all four original T3 headlights, and they all still work.
Wow.
Yes. So my question to you is, what does the T3 mean?
T3 mean, yeah. Okay. I saw that coming. The second you said our friends at GM came out with the T3 designator, I'm like, he's going to want to know what T3 means. Son of a biscuit. All right.
It sure is trivial.
T for trivial. Let's see here. I am going to say that the T means tungsten.
High-ranking show here, folks.
Yes, high-ranking answers, too, here. T is tungsten. Three, because... God dang it, Kevin. Why do you do this to me?
I don't know. Isn't that what a trivia question is?
Yeah.
Don't we do this every time? Wasn't this your idea?
Shoot. T3.
I didn't think you needed or you had enough disappointment in your life, so.
Yeah, I don't. I don't. I look to you. I look to you to really bring that out in me.
Yeah.
Shoot.
That's, and I'll give you, it is tough, not only because it could be one of those things that you either know it or you don't, like the Fratzog trivia question.
The gift that keeps on giving, the Fratzog.
Right, or is there a mathematical component to this? Why the number three? Because headlight systems were two lights or four lights, so what's the deal there?
Right, I mean, you had high beams or low beams. I mean, it wasn't like... Oh, gosh.
Tucker had three. And that starts with a T.
Yeah.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a GM product.
Listen, everybody, in case you haven't figured it out yet, this is what Kevin does. He tries to pretend like he's being the nice guy and he's leading you down the right path, but he's actually leading you right into the thorn bushes.
Well, like,
come this way, my friend. I have all things will be answered. Oh, look, a cliff. There you go.
I'm merely trying to make conversation.
Right.
Otherwise, we'd have several minutes of, I'm filling time.
I apologize for that.
So my mind is active, and I think T3. Mm-hmm. What would that be? Tucker had three headlights. I'm not suggesting it's relevant. This entire program.
All right. Third generation tungsten headlight. That's it. That's the T is tungsten 3, third generation.
All right, cool. So you're
dang it.
Going with the WD-40 logic there.
Sure. Exactly.
WD-40, of course, being named after a water displacement formula try number 40. Hey, that works for me.
Sure. All right, there's some kind of logic in there somewhere, somehow.
Tungsten... third generation. Right on. Well, there you go.
He's not really writing my answer down, folks. He's just writing ha 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 ha.
I could screenshot this and prove you're wrong. Because I would forget. We'd get to the end and I'd be like, what the heck did he say?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, what else we got going on today, my man?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff going on. It's springtime coming. We're recording this beginning of March already. So in my world, I was in the garage all day with the door open and the sun shining and just, you know, everybody's anxious to get the cars on the road and getting out and doing stuff. And I'm one of them.
Right on. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
We just sent home a 77 Trans Am project we were working on yesterday, which was pretty cool.
That white one, right?
Yeah, white with a red gut and a red bird on it.
That's pretty.
It was interesting. I mean, it is basically a Saturday Night Fever disco suit you can drive around.
Absolutely. Which is what it should, which is what a 77 Trans Am should be.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. That
and to me,
disco incarnate.
It was so, it's so much of a polar opposite of the previous white Trans Am, you know, like the 70 with the blue stripe.
Right.
Or a 69 with the two blue stripes. The only thing that's similar is the white, you know, the whole persona is totally different on that car.
Completely.
But
totally
still
agree.
Super cool. So that one was a originally a Pontiac 400 car. And the customer had purchased that car for her twin 16-year-old sons.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. This is going to be their first car.
Get out of town.
Yeah, and what happens? But mom blew it up.
Oh, right on, mom!
So she put a, and I think we shared that picture on Facebook of a Pontiac block with a hole through the block and the pan.
Oof.
It was completely grenaded. And so this, and I don't think it was the original engine of the car to start with, because 77 was a long time ago, and this thing has 130 or so on it. And we, you know, she's calling around, didn't have a whole lot of money to put in this. This wasn't like a, you know, a lifetime heirloom restoration project. This was, we got to get my kid's car back on the road here.
I gotcha.
So we were in the process of doing a brand L swap. Engine on another Trans Am, which was a factory Olds 403 car, a 79.
Oh, okay. No kidding.
And we had this Olds 403 laying around with nothing to do with it, so we took the entire 403 mechanism, the fan shroud, radiator, engine, exhaust manifolds, threw it in the 77.
Oh, cool.
And they were able to that engine lives on now. And,
nice.
You know, someday if they want to, they could return it to a 400 and make it correct again. There was no fixing their block.
Right.
So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you wouldn't even want to. I mean, it's not a rare block, and, you know, it's not like a,
right.
Like something that was only three of them ever made that you'd want to spend that kind of time and effort.
Right. It wasn't a
cast iron.
Ram Air 4 or something.
Right. Right.
So, interestingly, we... there's some trivia there. The shaker locations are different on the Olds cars versus the Pontiac cars.
No kidding.
Yeah. So we had to kind of modify the base of the air intake air cleaner assembly because we measured the two hoods, 77 to 79 Pontiac versus Olds, and the scoop location was different.
I'll be darned.
I did not know that. Yeah. There's a trivia
question. I did not know that either.
Yeah. So we got it running, and I drove it to the customer's home last night, and it was nice, torquey, smooth, probably a 325 gear or so.
Nice.
You know, and those things, we took a smog motor out and put a smog motor in it, but it had an okay tune-up on it, and it had a set of Cooper Cobra tires that were just old enough, you know, to be hard enough to spin at will. And they still squealed and made noise and smoked. So,
sweet.
So our 16-year-old, you know, customer's sons took him for a ride. And one of them appears to be, like, really into cars. The other one, I think, is just into this particular car. And the one guy that drove it like a grandma. And I have a feeling the minute I left and his mom was gone, that all changed.
Could be, probably.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Yeah, you don't hear of a 403 going back into one of those too often.
No, and the 403, unfortunately, is, you know, it's kind of the redheaded stepchild of those cars.
It is.
I guess Pontiac quit making the 400 in what, 76?
No, 78.
But I think all the 77 and 8 cars are carryovers, right? The manufacturing was done.
Oh, that I don't know. I know that my formula was a 400 car. It was a 77 formula and had a Pontiac 400 in it. And I know that 78 Trans Ams had, you could get 400s in those.
I think you can get them in 79 too. But it was my understanding that they quit making them and just used on the shelf stock and.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm not 100% on that. I don't know.
And that's kind of,
I couldn't say one way or the other.
That's kind of how the Oldsmobile engine got used in those. You know, there was the GM umbrella, you know, parent corporation basically said, "Well, we're gonna still make these GM or these Oldsmobile motors, but we're phasing out the Pontiac." So they just kind of switched them over. And then I think it was also all the 4-speed cars were Pontiacs. There was not an Oldsmobile powered manual shift.
That could be true. Yeah. That's a good trivia question. Shoot.
There's 3 or 4 of them in there.
Yeah. All gone now.
Yeah. Well, none of them start with T and end with 3, though. So.
Yeah, good times.
But
T3.
It was kind of neat to see a couple of 16-year-olds all wound up about that car.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like hearing about that.
And granted, it, you know, that Trans Am, like you're saying, it's got its own persona. And if you've seen, you know, it's a highly glorified car, but it's a great way to get into these things. It wasn't super expensive, being an off year.
Right.
And I asked the one guy, I said, so, you know, what do you know about this car? I popped the hood and gave him a tour. And he knew about the distributor and he knew about the steering pump. And he knew, you know, check the oil, the dipsticks and everything. You know, because I kind of take it for granted today. You don't do any of that on a car anymore,
right.
You know? The
yeah.
transmissions are sealed. You know, you're supposed to check the oil, but who does?
Right. And they have sensors for if you're starting to get a little bit low on oil. You'll get an indicator saying low on oil.
Right.
So that's when you'll know that you need to check it.
And then the oil change light indicator comes on and the whole thing. But he said that he learns most of his stuff off YouTube.
Okay.
And I said, you got to watch those guys on YouTube. What do they know?
Nothing.
Yeah. And the other one is he mentioned a video game that you actually, I guess you kind of spin some wrenches. And I don't,
really?
I forgot the name of the game, of course, because I did. But, you know, I know like in a lot of the racing games, you can get credits and apply the credits to get performance parts. But in this case, it actually sounded like there was an educational aspect of it. So I thought that was pretty cool. I
can dig that. That's good.
Figure out what the heck that was. But, so anyway, we invited him to come down to the shop. We'll teach him how to weld, you know, we'll let him, you know, work on the car or whatever. And
I want to come down and learn how to weld.
Hey, anytime, man.
Boom.
Anytime.
Yeah, it's one of my great failings as a car guy. I've never learned to weld.
Well, MIG welding to do a functional weld is not hard. The hardest part is getting the welder, to be honest, you know, and making sure you got electricity, you know, because a lot of companies sell 110 MIG welders or the flux core wire welders that don't require a gas bottle. And I kind of tell people that those are to me more of a source of frustration than satisfaction, because a 110 flux core wire, it is really challenging, even if you're a good welder, to get something you're going to be happy with. And there's a whole nother side aspect of that too, because you see on like social media, guys are posting pictures of their stack of dime, you know, welding and beautiful TIG welding with the rainbow and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But in reality, it doesn't have to be that pretty to work.
Sure.
You know, you can have a structurally sound weld that's not porous and has good heat penetration that doesn't look like that stack of dimes. So some of that is more of a, you know, kind of a showy thing.
Hey, look at me. Look what I can do. Kind
right.
of thing,
huh? Yeah. And I've met people that can lay down that beautiful appearing weld and can't build anything.
Oh, boy. Well,
yeah, and the other thing I thought was interesting is when, just on a weird philosophical tangent, but when did that become the standard of what a good-looking weld is? You know, because you're fusing two pieces of metal together. Wouldn't you want it to look like they were one piece to start with?
Yeah, I guess you would. I think it has something to do with the symmetrical nature of how a stack of dimes looks and how neat it looks. I think that's what would look attractive to somebody and say, ooh, that's a great-looking weld.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, it obviously is an indicator that somebody cares and took time and tried to make it look nice. But but anyway, I recommend a 220 welder with a gas bottle.
Okay.
But once you have that, you can make stuff stick together pretty easily. The stack of dimes thing comes with practice and
right.
the trickier aspects of welding upside down, under a car, aiming up, and doing double pass stuff. Or the other challenging part is dissimilar thicknesses. You're welding thick metal to thin.
Sure.
Sheet metal welding is tricky also. You just back everything off, you know, the heat range. So you don't burn through a thin piece to a thicker piece. That can be trickier. You got to get the heat in the one and not the other kind of thing. But the nice satisfying thing is if you have a decent welder with, you know, good electricity, you can be welding like right now.
Huh?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So next time you're at the shop, we're going to put a gun in your hand and point you at some steel.
Done. I'm ready, man. All right. Let's end this show. I got to hit the road.
Kelly loves
what was
to,
your trivia question answer?
That's right. Well, Kelly loves to teach people to weld, and she likes to weld all the time. She doesn't get a chance to do it that much anymore because she's running the shop. But her dad will come over with farm projects, you know, and she'll jump on that and burn that stuff together. So, yeah, it's cool. Welding is great. It's very satisfying. It's to me, it was a... it was a game changer when you could take two things and stick them together and they don't come apart. You know, now you're making something.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm on board with that.
Yeah, right on. And of course, we've recently expanded the capabilities and added another resistance spot welder for putting body shells together and, you know, frame rails and all that stuff. And this one, 8,000 amps.
Holy shnikes.
Yeah. And I think, I don't remember the clamp rating, but there's a clamp pressure number that goes along with it of PSI. Okay. So now, and we've had several resistant spot welders in the past. This one just happens to be an evolution to being a little bit bigger and badder.
Mm-hmm.
That 70 Mach 1 we're building in the shop ended up requiring floors, trunk floor, firewall. I mean, just about everything on this car. And when you have a tool like this, it turns out to be a lot faster and more cost effective to replace things one giant panel at a time and pinch weld them all together the way the factory did. Cause you know, they built Mustang shells in minutes, you know, using the same technique. Ours is not taking minutes, but it's not, using a wire feed welder where you would normally do a plug weld technique, drill a hole, overlap the panels, fill the hole back up with weld.
Sure.
Now you're just zap, zap, zap.
Sure. That's a big time saver.
Yeah. And then it looks correct when it's done. If you're going with a restoration on a car, cause it does that accurate dimple and the pinch and all that stuff it's supposed to have. So, the metal shop is very busy in our building.
I believe that.
Which is great. It's great.
Yeah.
Lots going on back there.
Nice. Well, you guys have that Pullmax machine, too, that you use to make panels as well, right?
Yeah, the Pullmax is an Austrian metal forming tool. It's basically an electric hammer that you interchange the dies, and they pound against each other to create a...
create a profile, a
shape in the steel. And we use that thing all the time for stuff that we never would have even thought. For example, someday if you ever have to replace the trunk floor on your GTO, the aftermarket trunk floor has an inaccurate shelf in the back where it meets the tail panel. So in order to, most people just kind of bend the floor upwards to meet the tail panel and weld it up and it's done. But in reality, it's supposed to have a step in it.
Okay.
And that step doesn't exist in the aftermarket panel for whatever reason. And so we used the Pulmax to put that step in the panel. We were able to, the Pulmax has a guide with a wheel on it. So you put the guide in place and then you can run a long piece of material through it. And it has a uniform space from the wheel to the tool itself, you know, kind of like a, you know, like a table saw is a good analogy. You got the little guide, you know, and you run it through the blade. Well, we could do that to put this little step back in the panel. And next thing you know, it looks like it never happened. You know, it looks like
an original
piece.
That's nice, man. Right, so. It's cool when you have the right tool, a good tool to really get a good quality result. So
yeah. And a lot of times, some of these tools like the Pulmax, people just think that they're for custom work, you know, for making, you know, they're famous for doing rounded things like, you know, motorcycle gas tanks and punching louvers and, you know, making trim and things that never existed. But like I said, our team is very practical and they're looking at this and they're saying, well, we can make that, you know, now that we've got that technology. So it is cool.
Good deal. Good deal. All right, what else we got going on here, man?
Well, right now, as we speak, the Detroit Autorama is in full swing.
That's right. We've got about to have a Riddler Award winner here, right?
Yeah, you know, it's like the most prestigious indoor or outdoor car show award anywhere. If you listen to this show, you're probably well aware of what the heck the Riddler Award is.
Uh-huh.
Named after Don Riddler. But this year... unfortunately, I'm not super familiar with all the cars. You got your entire show, and then you've got the Great Eight, which are chosen to be the final contenders, right. And then you got the Riddler. So I'm curious. There's, from what I can tell, I know there's a 57 Chevy that is just, they're all kind of, you know, they're all over the top. But there's a sedan delivery from the 30s. Mm-hmm. There's a Lincoln, a 56 Lincoln. A very cool car. There's a Ford T pickup truck, and there's two Camaros in it, which is interesting to me that we're seeing, you know, muscle car era entries into the Riddler, because typically it's all big fendered. There's also like a 40 Ford in there too, a Tudor, but you know, typically they're either hot rods or they're more big fendered cars. And this year we've got a 67 Camaro. A gold one, and then a black 69 Camaro that was built at Detroit Speed.
Oh.
Yeah, so sweet. Detroit Speed, you know, known for being on the racetrack all weekend, stepping into the ultra-high-end show car arena. So.
All right, you guys.
We'll make sure to have the winner on our page for this episode. We have a friend of ours named Joe who we hire every year to take pictures up there at Detroit because oftentimes I can't make it up there.
Right.
And he emailed me last night saying he had over 1,000 photographs.
Oh, boy.
So.
Oh, gee whiz.
Yeah.
All right, Joe.
I don't know if we're going to post them all. He did say he broke the camera.
Oh, man. Come on, Joe.
Yeah. So. I don't know. We wore the shutter out on that one or something.
I guess. Maybe the memory card melted.
Right. So that's cool. So it's always neat to see that stuff because it, you know, it's pushing the envelope of creativity and new ways to do stuff. I think that I read somewhere that Detroit Speed Camaro was a 13-year project.
Get out of here!
Yeah, and not that they worked on it straight for 13 years. The story that I heard was that. The owner of the car brought it to him and said, hey, let's build something over the top. And during the process, he kind of got antsy and he said, well, this is turning out to be a lot more of a high-end show car than I was originally anticipating. So let's build another one that could be like a weekend street and track car. So they built him a second one and then got back to the first one and finished it off.
I gotcha.
Oh, and there's also a Pontiac I forgot too. Leggins Hot Rods built I think it's a 39 where they created a sphere where the gauges are inside a sphere and the needles stay stationary, but the numbers rotate around. And
is that right?
Yeah. And you know that Pontiac styling cue where they've got that stainless ribbed trim that starts in the middle of the grill and goes up over the hood?
Yeah.
This one has that over the hood and over the roof, but the roof section is actually glass and light comes through it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's neat.
That is neat. Yeah, I'm looking at some, I just brought up a site that has these, the Grade 8 on here. Yeah, that Pontiac's a 36, white 36 Pontiac sedan. Looks nice. Yeah, I see that stainless trim going over the top and all that. That looks...
Oh, it's over the top.
I think that's your winner right there, Kev. What can I tell you?
Well, it starts with a P, I guess, so that's your, yeah. That's your deal. Well, and, you know, so last time we talked, you got the motor parts home for your GTO.
Yes, sir.
How's that process going?
I haven't done anything with it as of yet. I'm still... I still have to,
You're stuck.
I'm stuck.
In more ways than one.
Verbally as well as creatively.
Yeah.
But, no, I have to get bearings. I haven't done anything yet. I haven't ordered any parts yet, for it. But... My big sticking point is the heads I'm going to use, because the heads I have are the 670 heads, which were standard on the 67 GTO, and with those heads, I'll have a 10.3:1 compression ratio, and I think we
probably
talked about
this. We did. We touched on that, so we were concerned it's going to be a little too high a compression.
A little too high for pump gas. And I'm moving to the camp where that is going to be too high, and I want to lower it down. So I'm, you know, going to get some 6X heads, and that you're turning me on to.
Yeah, I think those the heads that survived that grenaded Trans Am motor might end up your way. Yeah. So that's cool.
Right.
Yeah, yeah,
that is cool. So I'll just have to get those gone through and looked at and made to work. So that should put my, depending on what 6X head they are versus if they're the 6X-4 or the 6X-8 will dictate what combustion chamber volume it is and what compression ratio I end up having. So
well, I know it ran, you know, because when she drove
Yeah, right.
Ran hard enough to blow the bottom of the block out. So they made some kind of power, you know. So
yeah,
that's good.
And then, yeah, I mean, I just.
But I did see that you were detailing some parts and getting accessories painted and all that jazz.
Yep. Yeah, I got the pulleys painted. I got to bring all the rest of the stuff over to my buddies, and we're gonna have it blasted and painted, and just get all of that ready for installing. So
right on. So we just gotta,
that's kind of where we are on that.
Gotta get you these heads so that it's the balls in my court now.
Yeah, come on, man, you're holding me up now. Now you're the guy.
Well, I know this project's been progressing so rapidly.
I'm ready to move.
Yeah, not now. He's Mr. Impatient.
Right, yeah, because 2 years wasn't enough.
Right, yeah, that was all fine and good apparently. Right on. Well, that's good. Well, we'll get right on those. When you come down for your welding lesson, you know, you could take the heads back.
See? Yeah, I'll come back a little heavy. We'll be all good.
The whole plan's coming together.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm excited about that. And I still hope to be driving this when the weather's nice this year.
Okay, so, yeah, clock's ticking.
The clock is ticking. It's springtime now.
Yeah.
Power tour's coming up.
Yeah, here we go again, folks.
I don't want to ride shotgun in my buddy Robert's Galaxy this year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they need to get you some kind of an award or something when you're on this trip this year, because
And
you're not the only guy. It's been a long time coming. A lot of people spend a lot of time preparing for that event. And that organization's going through some changes too, so it'll be interesting to see what's up. Yeah, so the last time I checked, it was the parent company was TEN, the Enthusiast Network that owned Hot Rod and all that stuff. Not anymore.
Really?
Well, yeah, and they made an announcement at SEMA that they kind of partnered with Discovery, the Discovery Channel, Discovery Communications.
That TEN did?
Yeah. to basically advance the video projects, Roadkill and mm-hmm. They've got Dirt Every
Day. Motor Trend On Demand and all that, right?
Motor Trend On Demand, yeah, and a whole bunch of different shows. So at the time, it was like, well, what happened? Did 10 buy Discovery or did Discovery buy 10? And it was kind of sold or portrayed to people that it was kind of a merger of some sort, you know, a mutual thing. And just the other day, I was looking for some Power Tour information, and I went to the 10 site, and there's no mention of Hot Rod anywhere.
Oh, boy.
Yes, and none of the car magazines, as a matter of fact. It's only some motorcycling stuff and outdoor and sport things. So the hotrod.com website's still out there and you know, the Hot Rod Network thing, but I don't know if it was completely absorbed by Discovery in that respect or what. I got to maybe call somebody over there and find out.
Yeah, you need to call your buddy Freiberger and figure this out.
Yeah, I could call Dave. Unfortunately, our friend Ilana Scher, who was the editor of the Roadkill magazine, was let go because the Roadkill magazine was terminated. So,
oh, man.
Yeah, and that was an interesting product because Roadkill is successful because it is video.
Right.
And I don't know how well it translated across into print. And print, there are certain things that aren't doing well these days. And, you know, in a lot of ways, print is still one of them. So, anyway, it'll be interesting to see how the events fared and who owns the event and all that jazz at this point. Don't worry, I'm pretty sure there will be a power tour for you to take your car on at some point. But maybe that's a little more motivation, you know.
Power tour. Yeah, maybe. Could be the last one.
I say that in jest because that event is far too big to ever go away.
Too big to fail.
Well, and I don't think it would fail. I just think it would, you know, at some point they might say, we're not really sure how to manage this thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a
the
great debate of, is Power Tour all about hot rides or is it about muscle cars or is it about people taking a brand new Mustang or a new Camaro and something they didn't necessarily build or wrench on, which is the opposite of what you're doing,
right?
And is that okay? You know, and there's a lot of people that don't think it's cool.
Yeah, you have the built not bought camp who, you know, they don't like your brand new Hemi Challenger with day two mods because they feel it's not authentic, which is stupid. I don't want to call anybody stupid. I don't want to call anybody stupid, but
or no mods.
But I mean, but your 69 Camaro that you built was once bought.
Mm-hmm.
It came off the showroom floor at one point. It was bought.
That's a good point.
So it's not like you went to the foundry and pour the body shell and cast your engine and all that. Yeah, it's all bought at one point. So can't we just all get along?
Yeah, you know, and I can understand it had a different charm when it was far more of a rolling hot rod show and not a rolling new car show. But what people got to remember is that from basically from the second year or so. So my first one was in 1996, and in 1996, Hot Rod teamed up with Plymouth to unveil the Prowler to the public.
Oh.
And Hot Rod's publisher, Jim Savis, drove that car on Power Tour, one of the early prototypes of the Plymouth Prowler. Now, yes, that was a new car, but yes, it was also something that was supposed to look like a hot rod. So it was kind of a hybrid of the two. But then just a couple short years later, 98 or so, 99, they kind of did the same thing with the PT Cruiser. I don't know if you remember that whole deal.
I remember the PT Cruiser.
Yeah, well, yeah, I remember the car. And it's funny how few of those you see on the road today.
Isn't it,
though? Because they were everywhere for a while.
Yeah.
But the PT Cruiser was supposed to be this retro-looking, like 40s
sedan delivery. Yeah.
And, And they said, well, you know, here's a great marketing opportunity to get these things on the road. Let's put them on the power tour. So the management at Hot Rod waived all the registration fees for anybody who brought a PT Cruiser. And next thing you know, there's 25 of these things going down the road. And I was at one point in a black 57 Chevy built by a friend of ours named Otto, who lives in New Mexico. And this is a quintessential 57. It's flamed Rochester fuel injection on a 283. Wow. And then he had custom interior with a C3 Corvette independent suspension. I mean, all kinds of hot rod in this car.
Yeah.
And he's going on the road PT Cruisers, and he went off the deep end. He's like, that is not a hot rod.
Yeah. You know, that, and it's not. It
no,
isn't.
No.
Not by anyone's definition would that be considered a hot rod.
No, you could put wood paneling on them. And you could put chrome
until there's a
on
blower sticking through the hood and big, you know, 14-inch wide back tires. It's not a hot rod.
Right, yeah. So they kind of opened the door to that stuff, and I'm certainly not saying a new Mustang is, you know, even remotely close to a PT Cruiser, but, mm-hmm. you know, you look at the magazine, and it was how to modify your new car and your old car. So it always catered to both.
Yeah, well, I mean, the market's there, so mm-hmm. I guess you got to go where your market is, where your market's moving to, so I can't blame them.
Right. But on the other side, there's a couple of other publications that are out there that are a little lesser known. Of course, Rodder's Journal is a tremendous magazine. It's celebrating an anniversary this year. It's been around for a long, long time. I should know the anniversary number. Maybe I'll look that up. But Rodder's Journal is a perfect bound magazine, so it's got a rigid spine, and it's all color.
Oh, nice.
And it's kind of the Bible of SoCal hot rodding.
Oh, cool.
And they're doing really well, which is great.
Good.
Nice coffee Good. Table book. Another one is, it's called Speed Revolutions, and it started off as Rodding Revolutions, and I think they just kind of went through a name change. And that is a project headed up by Randy Lorenzen, who's a photographer from, you know, very famous photographer in the hot rod world. We had talked about him in the past because he shot that Cadzilla poster that I was
Randy.
Randy's been around this stuff for a long, long time. And finally went into the publishing business for himself. And I think his son's involved with him, Sean. And they create this beautiful magazine. And you can jump online and do an online page turner. And it's really cool if you have a tablet, you know, because you can hold it like a magazine and flip through. And it's a neat concept because they've got these tremendously well-shot features. And then in the middle of the feature, you can touch on a part and a video pops up and you can learn about it as well. So it's cool. Like a magazine and video content at the same time. And
nice.
I recommend everybody check that one out. It's awesome. And then another new one just came out, and it's called Wheel Hub Magazine. And Wheel Hub, again, is headed up by Robert McGaffin, who is another photographer who has been shooting for magazines. You've seen his work a million times before. And this one is another coffee table type, oversized, all color, heavy stock, a lot of pages, super high-end cars. The first issue that came out had cars from Rad Rides by Troy and the Roadster Shop and I believe BBT Fabrication and Ring Brothers. So it's, you know, top shelf stuff and lots and lots of pages about each car, a lot of detail and it's cool, you know. So just when you think everything is online and 5-second sound bites and short attention span theater, here we're seeing some publications that have some depth and are delivering some information that are really worth checking out. So that's pretty exciting.
Good deal. Yeah, I know what you mean by that. The guy I knew when during my Volkswagen days, he was in our club, the Chicago Volkswagen Organization. He started a magazine, a print magazine, because he still believes in print journalism. He started a magazine called Alloy and Grit, and it's about the North American Land Rover vehicle. And they do, you know, it's premium, high quality pages, and you know, good stories, and high quality photography, and all that. And that just goes along to your point about, you know, print media not being dead. It's just going through a change, but it's still there's a market there still for it.
Oh, totally. And I think it's interesting, our friends over at Hemmings Publications, in fact, coincidentally, we are fortunate enough to be getting a little more coverage in this time in Hemmings Motor News, which is going to be, the guys at Hemmings Motor News contacted us, and they did a restoration profile on the Dodge Murata that we restored.
Get out of town, man.
Yeah, and it was
cool.
Look
at you getting some good play off of that car.
Well, and that car, we've talked about it before, it's a different car, it's not mainstream, and that's exactly why they wanted to feature it, because it's not something you see every day. And this is the first time one of our cars will appear in Hemmings Motor News. So this is the big book. It's not Hemmings Muscle Machines.
Right.
And we've been fortunate enough to have been featured in Muscle Machines several times in the past. But when it comes to Motor News, this is a first time for us. So those magazines are doing well, Muscle Machines and Motor News. And the Motor News, to me, is interesting because the vast majority of that magazine is classified ads. And people looking for cars and parts and stuff. And you would think, man, you know, why wouldn't you just jump online and find all that stuff? But there are so many people that that's where they go. They go right to that book, and they're familiar with it. And they know, you know, some of those people have been running ads in that book for, you know, 40 years.
Wow.
They get the same ad, you know, and over the same list of parts, you know, and it's, you know, whatever, Dave's Murata parts or whatever. and they don't exist online anywhere. These are sellers.
Oh, I gotcha.
That are print only also. And when we were restoring that car, we contacted the whole page of people that deal in that family of Mopar in that era and got to know every one of them, you know, because parts for that car don't exist.
So yeah.
It was kind of cool. So that's still a very valuable resource, you know, for people that are restoring cars. So that's cool.
Yeah. I hope it continues to be. I mean, there's something cool about just, you know, you walk outside of a store and maybe you see like a local car classified magazine, like I can't remember.
Like an Auto Trader kind of thing.
Yeah, like an Auto Trader type of thing. And you grab it and you can leaf through it and look at something cool, like, oh man, that's a cool car. I used to have that. And it's just a, you know, something that we used to do as kids or as younger people, and that you can still do it now. And it's so simple and so easy to do and doesn't require subscription. It's just, it's provided there for you. And it's kind of cool to be able to still be able to do that.
Doesn't require an internet connection fading in and
right.
out. Right. Exactly. Well, and I was reminded of that myself. And we had talked about this in the past also, but Cartoons Magazine.
Back.
It not only is it back, but finally it is actually appearing on the newsstand at my local Walmart.
Yeah.
So what's cool is that in the magazine distribution world, Walmart is a very tough avenue to carry a magazine because, as you know, anything about Walmart is all about high efficiency and a lot of sales. And if a product isn't cutting it on the shelf, they get it out. Mm-hmm. And magazines, there were ridiculous numbers before. Like you had to sell, in the magazine world, it's called a sell-through number. It's how many copies actually sell. And the way that works is a distributor makes a deal with the retailer, and they'll provide a certain number of copies. And if they provide 10 copies and only 3 of them sell, they take the other 7, they rip the covers off and send them the covers back to the manufacturer. They used to anyway. And they would say, here's how many we didn't sell. And you buy that space accordingly. So a typical good sell-through magazine in the car business was, you know, 30%, 40% was good. Walmart wanted like 70 and 80. They wanted to sell everything that, you know, that went through. And for a magazine like Cartoons, which is a super niche, it's a comic book about cars. I mean, come on. Mm-hmm. To see that on the shelf over there was like, wow, somebody made a great deal with Walmart. And I bought a copy off the newsstand, and that magazine comes out every other month, and it always has. Whenever it was on the newsstand, it was always every other month. And I remember, to your point, being a kid, you know, it's like So, you know, the January issue, then it would skip February, and then March, and then it would skip April and May, and then skip June and July. And I remember being in, like, April going, oh, man, I got to wait till July.
Yeah. God dang it.
And checking that newsstand at my local grocery store the way people check Facebook now.
Yeah. You're a newsstand junkie.
I was. I had to, you know, every time I went to the store, and my dad smoked cigarettes and would go to the store. You know, he wouldn't buy a skid load of smokes at a time, because I honestly think the action of going to a store was kind of a social thing that he liked doing. So he would go to the store and buy his three packs of smokes and, you know,
I got you.
Grab some beer or whatever. And I was always, bam, I'm going with Dad, you know, because why? You know, he probably wanted to get away from me. But I'd have to go check out that newsstand to see if the new cartoons was out. And, you know, that kind of faded for me as I got into high school, because I was reading actual car magazines, you know, technical magazines. But now it's back. So it was neat. Kelly and I are walking through the Walmart, and I'm like, hey, check it out. She's like, you're nuts.
I'm going to be in the agriculture section. I'll meet you later.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So that was cool.
Very nice. Very nice.
So go buy that one too. Go buy all those. They're all good.
They are all good. Yeah. I'm going to try and look and see where Cartoons is selling near me. It's got to be somewhere close.
Yeah, you can go to their website.
The Chicagoland area.
And they got a zip code thing where you can find a retailer.
Yeah, it's funny reading real automotive magazines. Remember the in every one they'd have that PAW. And they're always having a sale. Always having a sale.
That's it.
It was like 3 pages long. Like, oh my God, I can get a whole rotating assembly for $300. This is great.
That's right. Get a Blue Racer cam.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Wolverine. I saw those brands they had. And that place is still doing, they're still out there. They're still selling.
Are they
cars.
Really?
Yeah. Performance Auto Wholesale. There was one that went away that used to advertise in CarCraft. I bought a mail order engine kit for my first 70 Riv,
really,
from Wayne's Mail Order Engine Parts in Southern California, because they were like $8 cheaper than if I would have bought it locally, you know. But when
you're
scraping every dime as a college kid, it mattered.
Oh yeah,
and
sure.
Big box shows up, you know, the master. I didn't get the master kit. It wasn't a crankshaft kit, but it was, you know, everything else. Remember? Yeah, you get a re-rig.
I remember
kit
that.
Or a standard rebuild kit or the master.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
yeah,
you know, a street cam or a race cam,
yeah,
or a full
three-quarter
race cam.
Yeah. I want the three-quarter race cam.
Yeah, I asked the guy once, does that mean it's only got 6 cylinders with a cam in it? It ain't long enough.
Get out of here, kid.
Yeah, right. And
that's funny.
It's cool to grab, because I still have a whole stack of car magazines going way back. But if you open something up from the 90s, you know, and there's not a single web address. And, you know, not a single email address. And it's weird, you know, to see that it, you know, you and I think it wasn't that long ago, but it was 25 years ago.
20-something years ago, yeah.
Oh, boy.
It doesn't seem that long.
No.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
God, 20-some-odd years ago.
Yeah.
You just have the order form and a telephone number and an address to send your check in.
Right. Well, they used to have, you know, far more people on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and today,
yeah, that's true.
You know, people don't call each other anymore either, you know, so.
Right. Yeah, you'll text someone, can I call you?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, with the advent of dictation, texting became a little bit better for me, because it's hard to type on a little phone. And then luckily my laptop, I can text straight from it, so I can use the whole keyboard, which
that's
is cool.
Cool.
But just last week, you know, I was talking with a guy about building a 67 Camaro. I guess the car's finished, but he wants to do a mini tub and he wants to do fuel injection and stuff. And that whole thing was through text.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Technology, man. Yeah. It's crazy.
And then he finally called me at the end and it's like, we had nothing to say.
Do you get all that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Well, if you have any problems reading it, I guess.
That's awesome.
Let me know.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, the other thing that I came across, somebody gave me a box of some magazines, including, you know, You tipped your hand earlier. You probably actually have this one. I'm going to hold this up.
All right. Hot VWs. I used to read that one. Oh, is that a Scirocco on there?
Yeah,
huh?
like a Mark. What was this? A Mark One?
Yeah, Mark One Scirocco. Yeah, yeah,
from
yeah.
September 1980.
Nice.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Well, when you come down for your welding lesson, I'll send you home with some hot
Dig
VWs,
it.
Magazine.
Dig it. Yeah, but, gosh, that was just barely starting their water-cooled years. I think, was it 77, 78?
Yeah.
They started water-cooling?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When they had to move past the VW, the bug.
Yeah, the bug wasn't passing emissions anymore. They couldn't run hot enough.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So, I think that was 79. They stopped producing the bug in America.
Yeah, right. So if there's a trivia question on VW stuff next time, I'm done. I'm putting that out there now. Maybe I got to save and start reading these hot VW magazines.
You and I wouldn't do that, do you?
Here's a nice diagram of why all the Beetle suspensions look like they're collapsing in the back.
Exactly. Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But somebody gave me this box of stuff, and it had, you know, like some really old car crafts, you know, like little ones, and, you know, back when it was called Honk in the 50s, you know.
Yeah.
And they also were into these VW magazines. And,
is that right?
Yeah, I put them on the shelf, and I was kind of waiting to get some time to go through them. And there's a special kind of, well, my garage is kind of a shrine to old junk anyway. And I got a box of license plates, and I'm trying to figure out a cool way to do something with these license plates because I had a revelation once. I don't know if we talked about this before because my memory's shot today, but... a lot of people, you probably have old license plates from the, you know.
Yeah, a couple. Yeah, not too many.
My dad saved them all. And,
really?
Yeah, and I later learned kind of why he did. He was a police officer, and he had this thing with identity theft long before that was a thing. So, for example, he'd get a letter in the mail, a bill or something, and he would have to shred it before throwing it out because it had his address and his name on it.
Oh,
and
boy.
He was afraid that somebody was going to pin something on him somehow, you know. And wow. I always thought he was crazy, you know, because he had all these papers and stuff. And I'll never forget, I had a windshield out of a car that I was painting my buddy's 86 Mustang in my dad's garage. And I took the windshield out to paint the car, and I broke the glass. And it had a city sticker on it. And I'm like, oh, man. And I take the glass out, and I set it aside, and I call the glass company to get another windshield. And he comes running in with a scraper, and he's scraping the sticker off, and not to reuse it because it was destroyed. The sticker got cracked right through through when the glass broke. But I said, what are you doing? He's like, oh, it's traceable. You know, you can't leave that leave a number out there. I'm like, well, what's going to happen? You know, the windshield cops are going to come or something. But I think he saved all his license plates so that they couldn't get reused on a car that was going to go rob a bank or something.
Oh, boy.
Right? And just the other night, I was talking to Kelly's family friend, and she was saying that, and I have a hard time believing this story, but I understand the mentality. She was saying that back behind a farm, there used to be this ditch where everybody dumped steel and stuff. You know, on farms, a lot of times you just dump your junk in a ditch. And she said that they, 50 years ago, a policeman knocked on the door saying that their car was involved in an accident. And she's like, the car's right here. And they traced the license plate, and somebody had found old license plates in the ditch and put them on their car.
Oh.
And they were driving around with them. And not necessarily to go commit crimes, but just to get out of buying their own license plate. Right.
Right.
And today, you know, so I'm trying to put this together, because today you got a sticker you can put on the license plate. Yeah. In the old days, you get a new plate every year.
Yeah, right, right. It had the year on the plate.
And they were a different color. So,
yeah.
So that story doesn't really make sense to me. But nevertheless, I have this box of old license plates. In fact, I have the license plates that were on the car when I was born, that I came home from the hospital in.
You're kidding. No. I'll be darned.
My dad had a 70 Chevy Biscayne police car, decommissioned police car. It was green with a white top.
Right on.
And it had a small block 400 in it. It was a Biscayne four-door.
Sure.
And I still have those license plates. And I could never really bring myself to throw them away.
Yeah.
Not, you know, for any of the craziness that my dad had. But today, that little story, it dawned on me that, okay, so I have a license plate from a car that we had when I was in high school. All the fun and stupid and crazy stuff we did, that plate was there.
Yeah.
Right?
That plate could talk.
That's it. The car's long gone, but that license plate was there. And as is the license plates I have when my parents were dating before they got married.
Get out of here.
I got plates from 1960, basically, up to now. And a lot of them are, you know, well, these are all just from my family, you know, and front and backs, you know, match sets. And some are when my dad had two cars, it was sequential numbers, you know, one ended in 44, next one in 45 or whatever. So I'm trying to think of a cool way to display these things. And, you know, you go to all these restaurants where they've got, you know, the pieces of flair on the wall and they're all hanging up and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's all right, but it doesn't tell the story. So I'm trying to figure out a way to make kind of a frame that's got a picture of the car.
Oh, yeah.
And then the plate
and
next
to it. And the plate
it,
in there, yeah.
You know, and it. We have some photos of this stuff, not all of it. It would be really sweet, though, to have a little story of, you know, each one of those
things.
That's
pretty cool. That's a great idea.
That's kind of what I'm working on now. And recently I had a... our family took a lot of slide photos, as yours probably did too. And back in the 60s and 70s, my dad was big into photography. In fact, he was the photographer for the police department. He was the evidence photographer for a while. And my whole, you know, kind of the universe revolves around this 62 Ford Galaxy that we have. Well, the car that we have today was purchased in the 90s, but my dad had one new back in 62. Right. And I recently obtained from Amazon a little digital slide scanner where you can...
Cool.
It doesn't require a computer or anything. You pop the slide in, push the button, and it scans it in a on an SD card, and then you can transfer them to the computer. And they're decent. You know, it's not like a professional service, but it was less than $100, and, you know, you can do, you know, whatever. So I found 4 never-before-seen slides of the original 62 Galaxy that my dad bought.
Get out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's killer.
It was neat. And he had bought that car in June of 62 and promptly went to, in Chicago, and him and his brother and his brother's pregnant wife went to Seattle for the Seattle World's Fair in 1962.
Oh, boy.
So you can imagine the three of these people in a... you know, what they call a box top, 62 Ford Galaxy hardtop, with no AC, driving across the country in July, I think, end of June.
Jeez.
White car, red interior, from Chicago to Seattle, you know, and back, and they went through California and everything. And these slides were in boxes, and the deal was, back in the day, you'd go take pictures, have them done up as 35mm slides, and then you'd have to break out a projector and put up a screen, and, you know, have, it was at somebody's birthday party or something.
Yeah, it's an event.
It was, and you put them all in a carousel, and one by one, and it was a pain in the ass, you know, is what it was. So, most of these slides... they got looked at once, you know, because you bored all of your friends and family, and then you put them in a box.
Sure.
And my dad had a little viewer that you could take a slide and pop it in and look at it. It had a light bulb, and it was a mini screen thing.
Yeah.
So I'm betting that these Galaxy slides that I just found from that trip to Seattle may have been shown once on a screen or twice and then put away. So I got those scans.
Should be pristine.
They're nice. The color shifted quite a bit. They're kind of... red, but I'm in the process of doing the whole build and history thread on our 62 Galaxy, and it starts with those pictures.
Nice, man.
And my aunt Jean is still around, who was on that trip, and I sent her some of these pictures, and I said, "Do you remember these?" And she's like, "Oh, do I ever? I was pregnant. It was hot, you know." So I'm like, I don't really want to stir up any. animosity here. I'm just kind of figuring what was the car like.
Right.
But the other
weird, pretty cool, man.
It is cool. So maybe I can, you know, scan one of those and put that in the. The problem is the one picture I have, you can see the license plate, and I don't have that plate.
Oh no!
Yeah,
I have. God, dang it!
I have an Illinois 62 plate. I don't know what the heck it's from, but it's not that car. So
it'd be cool if you could do a search and figure out what car it belonged to. I don't know if those records even exist anymore.
Don't know. And I had thought about trying to find that car. And, you know, one episode we talked about finding my old man's motorcycle.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say, you found your old man's motorcycle before it was finally gone. You could find out where this plate belonged.
The car, unfortunately, he sold it in 64. So, I mean, that's long.
Yeah, long gone. That's long gone. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's nothing with a VIN. I got lucky to find the VIN of the motorcycle, right. You know. So I there's nothing on that thing. I'm a member of a few Galaxy organizations, and you know, there's a lot of guys that have white red gut 62 XLs out there. That you know, you wonder maybe this is it. I don't know. Who knows?
You know what, dude? I know what you mean. I've always wondered, I wish to God I had a VIN of my old man's 65 GTO that he bought brand new. I would love to know what the fate of that car has been.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw one, it's a blue charcoal 65 GTO, and I saw one at a show, and it was four-barrel car, just like my dad's was. And typically, everyone puts tri-power on them. And I'm thinking, man, what if that was the car?
What
How
year
cool
did
would
he
that
sell?
Be?
What year did he sell that one?
He sold it, I think, in 67 after my brother was born.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, is it's too long ago.
Yeah, exactly. And I never had the there's only one picture that exists of it, and half the front end is cut off.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, right. Well, that's how these Galaxy slides are, too. They're, yeah. It's the back of the car or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me thinks that, you know, if it was like in the 80s, you might be able to petition the state and get like a driving history or renewals or something that might have a VIN. But back in the 60s, I just don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I know it was stolen, I think, at least once, but it was recovered in Cleveland.
Was there a police blotter?
No.
Stolen cars. I don't know if they showed up in police blotters, but you might check the microfilm of all those newspapers is online.
Yeah, but I don't know what. That'd be a lot of digging. But
well, there you go. Yeah, that's what it takes, man. I went through it.
Yeah, you did.
Years I spent looking for that damn motorcycle.
Jeez,
and I missed it by that much.
Oh, I know that. I think about that from time to time too. It breaks my heart that you missed it by. It was so close.
Well, he meant for me not to have that thing, and he won.
Yeah, he won. He certainly did.
Yeah.
Well,
all right, so the suspense is killing me here. The two turbocharged cars from 1962, big year of the
62.
Show.
62. You said the Olds Jetfire, and that is correct.
Mm.
And I wish you would have stuck with your Buick answer, because then I could have said, na 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 boo boo, you're wrong. But you're right. It was the Chevy Corvair.
How about that? Right on. Nice.
The Corvair Monza Spider.
It was the Monza. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Mm-hmm, I didn't want to get too far into it, because I didn't want to be like really wrong, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and those are wild cars. That's cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, well, your guess was on the what does T3 mean? And you said tungsten third gen.
Yeah,
and I believe the tungsten part is correct. I don't have verification either way, so I'm going to give you that one, no problem.
All right.
The three refers to the fact that these lights were very bright for the day, and in their design, they didn't want to blind oncoming cars. So the lens actually pitches downward 3 degrees and to the right 3 degrees.
Get out of here.
And that's the T3, so.
I'll be darned.
I'll give you
I'll
half
be darned.
Of one, right? Yeah.
All right. I'll take half of that.
Yeah, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, I'm damn glad to have half.
Yes.
Oh, man.
See, that half, that's how you get to the top of that
it's popular podcast. Become high ranking. List.
Yeah, exactly. One half at a time. All right, man. Well, it's always a pleasure. This was another fun show, and we've been pounding it into people's heads. So subscribe to us on iTunes. Check it out. Help us get higher on the list.
Help us kick and click and clack's butt.
That's right. Gunning for Corolla. And you can also listen on the TuneIn Radio app, which is cool. I've recently ventured further into the smart TV realm and got an Amazon Fire Stick.
Nice.
Awesome. That is an awesome device.
It is. I have the Fire TV.
Yeah.
And it's cool. You got the TuneIn app on that. You can look at all that stuff.
Yeah, and the Fire Stick is neat because you don't need a smart TV. You just need a TV with an HDMI port. Plug it in. Now you got a smart TV, and it's cheap. And when you download that TuneIn Radio app and you can see our show, the whole screen fills up with V8 Radio episodes.
Oh, it's so beautiful. So beautiful.
It is a stunning display of mediocrity.
It's beautiful. I can't. It's indescribably beautiful.
Yeah, don't cry. And then there's also the Stitcher Radio app that you can get the podcast on. Of course, if you go to V8Radio.com, well, then that's where you can see the pictures we're talking about in Mike's collection of hot VW magazines. So,
right
as always, thanks for listening, and I guess keep it under 100, and we'll see you next time on V8 Radio.